from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic healthcare, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager.
This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager. And with me today on the line, Clark Doane. We're going to be speaking about anthroposophy. Clark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bruce. It's nice being here.
All right, let's just start right out. What is anthroposophy?
Well, let me see. I'll give you a definition of anthroposophy that was given by its founder, and it's, in fact, its originator, Rudolf Steiner. And his definition is taken in the very last year of his life, when he put everything in a very concise and complete form. And this is what he says. Anthroposophy is a path of knowledge to guide the spiritual in the human being to the spiritual in the universe. It arises in man as a need of the heart and of the life of feeling, and it can be justified only in as much as it can satisfy this inner need. He alone can acknowledge anthroposophy who finds in it what he or she himself or herself in their own inner life feels impelled to seek. Hence, only they can be anthroposophists who feel certain questions on the nature of man and the universe as an elemental need of life, just as one feels hunger and thirst. So you can see the above definition clearly shows that nobody can or should be converted to anthroposophy, but it can only through their own need come to acknowledge it. And
okay.
That's what happened to me.
Now, I've heard what you've said now. The only thing is I really kind of don't know. I really don't know if I understand what that was about, because it almost sounded like you didn't know what it was. You could become it, and then you would know later or something like that. Is that being silly? Or?
That's not bad. Anyway, all of us who come to anthroposophy, I came to anthroposophy about 20 years ago. And a little bit of my background, which is not spectacular, but I was born with, it seemed like, very early in life, with a need to know everything, and it led to my going to school. I went to the University of Utah, and I ended up studying geophysics, which seemed to be a good way to get into the scientific world and do some kind of productive work. And I chose geophysics because it contained a little bit of everything: physics and geology and geophysics and all the various engineering supports that go along with it. It seemed like more of a comprehensive type course. And as soon as I graduated, my interest suddenly switched, and I got interested in the psychology and the psychological nature of man. And that went on for a while, and then that led me into the metaphysical, into the occult. And I got involved in just about every phase of it as part of my investigation, as I can, I could note. And about 20 years ago, I came across anthroposophy, which to me was the summation of anything to do with the spirit and the spiritual nature of man and his involvement with the earth and the universe.
I think that's pretty clear now, at least we understand that.
Yeah, so Rudolf Steiner, I'll give a little bit of his background. I spent most of my life working as a geophysicist, but my real interest at night was the study of metaphysics, and I got involved in the study of astrology. That was before I come across anthroposophy. And I studied astrology from various points of view, and I got into this idea of spiritual astrology. And in my practice, it led me to somebody who introduced me to Rudolf Steiner. And this, I think, what happens to all people who get involved in anthroposophy. Somebody comes along and suggests that here's another approach that you may find will lead you a little bit farther than you've been before. And that's what anthroposophy does. It introduces you to a whole new viewpoint on the seeking for knowledge and seeking for truth and you find yourself involved in the whole cosmos, the whole universe.
Okay, now for those of you who may have just tuned in, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager, and with me in the studio today, Clark Doane, anthroposophist. How's that sound?
That's exactly right. But as I said in my early definition of anthroposophy, is a person seeks anthroposophy and becomes an anthroposophist because of the need of the soul, need of the spirit.
So you're brought into anthroposophy by a need that you have inside, not by someone from the outside. So it's quite a bit different, let's say, from being converted to Christianity, which would be the need of the person converting you.
That's exactly right. And the person who is in anthroposophy, like myself, an anthroposophist, I don't try to convert anyone because I know it's impossible. It has to come from within.
All right, now, we have a little bit of an understanding here. Why anthroposophy of all? It's even hard to say.
It is. And the meaning of the word anthroposophy gets into some very esoteric matters, and anything that Rudolf Steiner presented as anthroposophy is very, very complex. And I'm still, 20 years later, in complete awe of what he covered. He gave the information in over 6,000 lectures, covering every conceivable field in metaphysics and its relation to real life.
So this is Rudolf Steiner's baby, so to speak. I mean, this is his thing, huh?
Yes, it is. But what really is an evolutionary thing. Nothing in our world today stands alone like something that just suddenly appeared and didn't have anything before it. Anthroposophy has a long history before it. It's kind of an evolution. It comes right from the mystery schools of ancient times. Well, the mystery schools, which are known in our conventional education schools, were the religious or spiritual centers of the ancient world. This is before Christianity. And they were located in places like Greece and Egypt, Chaldea, India, and Mesopotamia. The area of ancient civilization.
Well, Pythagoras, for instance, had a mystery school. Pythagoras.
That is correct.
We all know about the Pythagorean theorem, but
yes.
He had a mystery school. Is that correct?
Yes. And the famous Greek philosophers all got their knowledge and teachings from the mystery schools. And the mystery schools actually go further back than that, into the dim mists of time, into the ancient so-called mythical Atlantis, which anthroposophy says was a real place and a real existence. But most of us human beings have gone through the Atlantean period of evolution, and the mystery temple started in Atlantis.
Now you just very quickly there alluded to reincarnation without anyone knowing that, right?
Well, I would have certainly got into it some way
right,
or another.
We'll hold on. So if you continue, and then we'll get back to that one.
Right. Well. I'm saying the mystery schools then originated in the Atlantean civilization, which preceded our own. And this, again, is a subject of anthroposophy of Rudolf Steiner. He has spent considerable time lecturing on the Atlantean civilization and our place in it, and the time when the mystery schools. The mystery schools were actually oriented to what was called the planetary centers. And they were called oracles in old Atlantis, according to anthroposophy. And there was an oracle of the sun, an oracle of Mercury, an oracle of Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and Vulcan.
Now, our understanding of an oracle is someone who's is channeling particular energy from an ether source?
Well, this is not too far from the truth here. But here again is some more of the complexity of anthroposophy, because anthroposophy is quite the antithesis of our material concepts of our universe. And present in the mystery schools was the influence of spiritual beings of a higher evolution than man that were guiding mankind in his own evolution. And so the oracle, the person, the human being, could become a channel for one of the higher beings.
Okay.
And priests of the oracle temples, were, as you say, channeling, as you suggest.
All right, now...
They were acting under the guidance of the spiritual hierarchies, as Rudolf Steiner calls them, to have been guiding our evolution since the very beginning.
All right, so the information that came to the mystery schools came from, let's say, the other side, for lack of a better term at this minute.
Yeah, Rudolf Steiner will call it the supersensible world, or
right,
the spiritual world.
And it would come via an oracle or a trans channel who would deliver this information to those people in the mystery school who would, what, record it?
Well, at this time, nothing was recorded. There were no written recordings of these things. And at this time, human evolution was quite different than it is now. And people, the common people, we might call them, looked up to the oracles, the priests of the oracles, because they were truthful and genuine. At this time, there was no deception in the world like there is today. And so spiritual information, education, right down to how to do things, how to farm, how to build, all these things came from the so-called gods and the gods of mythology. But these were those who inspired the priests of the oracle centers in Atlantis. And this Atlantean civilization was transferred to the New World after the destruction of Atlantis. And the mystery centers were reestablished in the various civilizations. But as time went on, the mystery schools degenerated. And by the time of Christ, most of them were no longer to be trusted, put it bluntly. But the mystery schools went underground, the true mystery schools. And Rudolf Steiner then, as I said, represented in the 20th century a reestablishment of the mystery schools that was made available to everyone who was seeking this knowledge, not just a selected few. See, the old mystery schools, an initiate had to be trained. He went through years and years of training, starting when he was very young, to be able to qualify for learning things that we learn in high school or in grade school even.
Are you saying that in the mystery schools, the person who's being trained would be trained into being an oracle of some type, or?
Well, the mystery schools would take the very best of the youth of that particular area and train them to become priests in the mystery schools.
All right, priests.
But they had to become thoroughly trustworthy and thoroughly moral. This was in the early mystery school, to be able to receive that knowledge, which they would hand down to the next generation. In other words, the spiritual knowledge that was given to mankind from very earliest times was generation after generation was handed down through the mystery school. And then mankind's evolution began to change. And this is a whole story in itself. They even appeared in our own continent, Central and South America. But the main mystery schools that we know of historically were in the area around Greece and Asia Minor and Egypt, old Chaldea or old Babylon, or what is now Baghdad. And these were the main mystery schools centered in that area. But there were other mystery schools for other civilizations. In fact, all ancient civilizations had their version of the mystery schools, which were inherited from the old Atlantean time. And today, the mystery schools have emerged into full consciousness and into 20th century terms. See, everything is evolving and changing. Mankind has been evolving and changing through all this time. This is according to the teachings of Rudolf Steiner. We go back 2,000 years, the human race was different than it is today. They have different faculties even. And so each 2,160 years actually is...
Actually, that's what I think I was talking... That's what I meant as far as you're talking about Atlantis. I think you were mentioning the idea that in Atlantis, civilization was quite a bit different.
Yes, very different. Even the human bodies were different. And Rudolf Steiner goes into great detail in the evolution of the Earth through all of its stages, through all time. This is one of the fascinating parts of anthroposophy. And then you get an appreciation of time.
Well, let's just be specific. What does he say was different about the human body at that point?
In Atlantis, they were much larger, and but they were in the mid time of Atlantis. And this was, say, about 15,000 years ago. Give you some kind of a time reference. And another thing to remember, time references in anthroposophy do not agree with time references in our materialistic science. They're based on quite different information.
Well, actually, we know as timeless voyagers that time is not linear.
Well, that's a good way of saying it.
So let's hear it anyway. We'll,
okay. But today we have faculties of the soul, which are fully developed, that were not developed in Atlantean times. In other words, the Atlanteans did not have the mind capacity that we have today, the mental capacity.
All right.
Was not able to think for himself. His thoughts were given to him from outside.
So he was unable, for example, to logically ascertain an answer to something.
That's right. The
now, what was he
dependent? Development of logic and independent thinking came through Abraham, incidentally.
All right.
And at the time of Abraham, which is about 3000 B.C.
So what we're hearing at this moment from you is that the development of our intellectual capacities, which we are so used to at this point, and even perhaps encumbered by...
We take for granted, too.
Right. Was only a 3,000 or 4,000 year development.
That's correct.
I added an extra 1,000 on there just for safety's sake.
That's all right, because every faculty that's developed had its forerunners. There are people who are always in advance of the evolutionary stream. And that accidentally goes back to the mystery school. The people in the mystery school were always quite a bit advanced of the ordinary run of evolution as people. It's not that they were, say, any better, but they were at the vanguard of evolution.
So you can almost say that even in every species, if you've got some fish begin to develop legs and go out on the land, that they'll be the forerunners of those that become, let's say, reptilian.
Yes, that's a good analogy for
all
that.
Right.
And so the faculties that we are developing today, even man is developing new faculties, they're appearing, and it's part of the plan of evolution, that only a few people have been able to manifest them.
All right, let's name them so we can be excited and find out.
Pardon?
Let's name those faculties. The newer ones.
Rudolf Steiner says we are developing now the faculty of, I can't recall exactly the terminology, but I would call it karmic thinking. It's the best I can think of now. You know, anthroposophy is a vast subject, and my memory is only mortal.
Okay, so but
it means that we are developing the power to see what the consequences of our actions will be.
Okay, now that's...
We take a certain action, we know in the future something will happen. And man is going to become completely conscious of this in the future.
Okay, so in other words, you won't be able to have the standard thinking which allows you to perhaps look in a telescopic way. That's not the right word, but there's a word for that. I'm losing my vocabulary here on the air.
Yeah. Well... For instance, to get to lead up to this, a faculty was developed in the time of ancient Greece, say around 400 B.C., the faculty of conscience. Until that time, mankind did not have a conscience. That is, within himself, he did not know right or wrong.
Now, does that mean that he... Now, you use the word know, meaning on the level of knowing.
Knowing, correct.
Okay.
So what happened, there, for instance, in the ancient Greek...
Because this almost sounds like... This almost sounds like the Garden of Eden.
Well, the Garden of Eden, as I understand it, goes back to ancient Lemuria, which went back even further past in time to Atlantis. So in our discussion, I didn't go back that far, but
okay.
Rudolf Steiner does. He covers just about everything you want to know.
All right.
And
I'm
more.
Sorry. Let's come out of the Garden of Eden and back then.
The aspect of evolution, spiritual evolution, and man is undergoing an evolution and has a goal. But I was talking about in ancient Greece, man developed a faculty of conscience. And now, in our present time, we're developing the faculty not only to know right and wrong, but to know that if we do something, we're going to have retribution in the future. Or if we do something constructive, we know that something constructive is going to come out of it. This is the idea of karmic thinking.
Right. That was the term you were using.
To know what the consequences of our actions are. This means that if we're going to take the path of evil, well, we'll know where we'll end up.
Right, so there should be no surprises, is that correct?
No surprises, yes. And so you mentioned in your last summary that Rudolf Steiner was the originator of anthroposophy, but he was merely the man who brought it into the, brought the mystery school, the mystery knowledge, the mystery wisdom into the present time. And since he had many, many disciples that were quite independent, and he encouraged everyone to be completely independent, not take anything that he said without verifying it through their own conscious thinking processes. And so he developed an awful lot of followers who extended his work in just about every area you can think of, and made anthroposophy now a very living body of knowledge, which is fantastic. It takes a lifetime to absorb it. I'm in my 20th year now, and as I said before, I'm still in awe of all that I still have to learn about it.
Okay, now let's look at something interesting here. Does anthroposophy account for higher states of consciousness?
Yes. One of Rudolf Steiner's contribution was the science of meditation that developed, development of higher consciousness. And this is he presents to us the safe way, the way that will not get us into trouble in the future. That will be a slow process, but it's a thorough one, and it depends upon our developing a very moral position, without which our development of our higher consciousness could lead us astray, and we could turn our consciousness to evil ends. And so his system of meditation for the evolution or the development of consciousness is one of his contributions, and also his primary work was called The Philosophy of Freedom, or Spiritual Activity, in which you train the will to be the servant of the mind, but the mind also the servant of morality, which is the spirit. And in other words, the idea that the human mind is not a product of the brain, but a product of the human spirit and soul that works through the brain. The brain is merely a physical instrument.
All right, so what we're doing is we're looking at the brain now as what it really is, namely kind of like a radio.
Right.
It's actually
a receiver,
right, a
and
receiver.
Then it can transmit.
It transmits and receives.
Yeah, but it transmits through the senses, through the vocal cords, you might say,
right,
like we're doing now.
So in a sense, we are just physical representations of something larger or smaller, depending on...
Yes, Rudolf Steiner goes into the science of the real constitution of the human being. We're not only a physical body, but we have a life body, which is called an etheric body. We have an astral body, which is a body of feelings and emotions and consciousness and mind. And we have an ego body, which is the highest form of manifestation on the Earth planet today. It brings us one step above the animal kingdom. And this ego is the representative of our true spirit, our immortal spirit, which reincarnates through time, so we live many lives to develop this higher consciousness.
Now there are, along with the areas of inquiry that we've talked to, there's some interesting ideas. Now there's the Waldorf schools, which are, is this an educational platform for learning anthroposophy?
Yes, there was a group in Germany back in the early 1920s. Waldorf was actually, had a cigarette factory in Stuttgart, I think it was. And he was a humanitarian person. He wanted to put his money, his profits, to work in something constructive. And we asked Rudolf Steiner if it would be possible to establish a school which would train young people and educate them as they really are as human beings, not just as automatons or machines or physical bodies,
mm-hmm.
but as sentient people with souls and spirits. And who would be educated according to the time of their development. In other words, Rudolf Steiner had extensive lectures on education and the fact that the child is different every year of his life and has to be treated not only as an individual, but differently at each year.
Well,
and
for
have personal treatment. Every
why don't
child
you give
should
us
be
an
educated
example?
On a one-to-one basis.
Right.
And that's very difficult. But the Waldorf schools were established to accomplish this.
Now, can we have an example? Can you give us one, like some particular year and why that's different?
Well, Rudolf Steiner's main contributions here was that every 7 years, a child is under a different phase of development. But this 7 year continues all the way through our adult life, too. But the first 7 years, the physical body is being established as an independent entity from the mother. And so the body learns by imitation, and the child at that age between 0 and 7 learns by imitation, and so they learn mostly from their parents, and they imitate. If the parent or the teacher is immoral, they'll learn immorality. If it's moral, they'll learn morality. And in other words, they pick up by imitation. But the next 7 years, from 7 to 14, we have the development of the life body. And this is the time when the child has to learn about feelings. In fact, human beings as a whole develop in 7-year cycles. And as I was saying, we have not only the birth of the physical body, birth from the mother, separation of the body, the physical, and then the physical body has to develop and complete its development in the first 7 years of life, and it learns through imitation. And so when the child is very young, they are taught the correct moral principles, and they learn through the teacher has to be quite an upright person, and they learn from example. And the second 7 years, age 7 to 14, the life body now becomes independent. And so they have to learn creativity.
Is this life?
Living things and emotional feeling things.
When you're saying life, are you saying the life, L-I-F-E, body?
That's right, life.
Okay.
And
I just didn't know if you were saying light, L-I-G-H-T.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. And it's very important that a child does not get any intellectual or mental training until at least 10 or 11 years old, because then the nervous system is developed too fast and drains energy, life energy, from the rest of the development, and the person will in later life become nervous or somehow afflicted mentally. So our present form of education, introducing mental things very early, is very wrong. And anthroposophy is again reflecting in the Waldorf schools what man really is and how he really should be developed and how he really should be schooled. And then age 14 to 21, the feeling body that then is born, the emotions, and of course with the very complex thing of adolescence and the sexual awareness, and
so
the
one-to-one
relationship now developed between male and female. And
this
so
sounds
forth.
Very sensible. This is very sensible, Clark. I'm interested. This is something.
But there's some very fascinating books on this particular subject in the education field. But the anthroposophy, Rudolf Steiner has authored about 50 books and about 6,000 lectures, and these lectures have been translated and put into book form into cycles of lectures. So there's enough information on any subject if a person is interested. They could spend a lifetime opening their mind and their heart to new things.
Let's talk a little bit about spiritual astrology.
Well, as I said, that was my particular specialty. And when you look at a horoscope, and Rudolf Steiner was a very excellent astrologer, among other things. He's just about everything you can think of. And a horoscope cannot be properly interpreted, this is in terms of anthroposophy, without the consideration of reincarnation and of karma and the relative development of the various bodies of man, not just the physical, but the life body, and the emotional body, and the ego body. And so astrology becomes a lot more complex, but the Rudolf Steiner considered the planet, like we say planet Mars, as really being a sphere, a three-dimensional sphere surrounding the Earth within the orbit of Mars. And in that sphere, the spiritual beings, or the spiritual hierarchies who govern from Mars, influence man, and influence him from the level from the ego all the way down to the physical body.
So let's get this straight now. The planet Mars, okay, not only is influencing, but its realm of influence is the entire area that it surrounds as it travels around the Earth?
Yes.
Travels with the Earth around the Sun, let's say.
Yes. And the position of the planet Mars, like in astrology, is only the focal point. But the important thing is that the influences and the forces that are coming from the planet Mars are not physical, but they're spiritual forces. And they move down into the physical and affect the physical very strongly, because Mars is connected with man's total evolution. And at one time, our bodies and our life bodies and our feeling bodies were evolving on what was at one time Mars. Well, that's, I'm not saying that very, very correctly. We got to say it this way. The Earth is in, that we're now living on, is the fourth incarnation of the Earth. So we take the idea of reincarnation and apply it to the planetary.
Now, you're saying, well, first of all, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager. We're talking to Clark Doane today, anthroposophist, and you are saying that the Earth has had three other incarnations.
Yes, and this is another one. Rudolf Steiner is the first clairvoyant who's researched these incarnations, and anything that Rudolf Steiner has said about the earlier incarnations, the Earth, the earlier civilization, he has seen by the reading of the Akashic Record. Now, probably many of your listeners are familiar with the Akashic Record. I'm sure in
well, maybe you could just, let's be specific.
Well, let's say everything that's ever taken place in our Earth evolution has been recorded in the fabric.
This is like the book of life, so to speak.
Yes, of time.
And those people who are able to clairvoyantly see that are able to know about the past and the present and the future, is that correct?
That's right. Rudolf Steiner, to my knowledge, was an absolute master of all three levels of clairvoyance. And a lot of clairvoyance.
I didn't even know there were three
levels.
What are the three levels?
Well, he calls the first level the level of imagination, which is visual clairvoyance, in which you can see behind the veil of the physical, you can see the astral world, the physical, the manifestation of the spiritual behind the physical.
All right. You see it.
The next level, you see the beings who are there, and they speak to you. You can have communication with them. This is called clairaudience. This is the next level. He calls this the level of inspiration. And incidentally, it's the level of inspiration that many poets, artists, musicians, whatnot, receive inspiration from the higher spheres in the terms of their music. But
okay, and then the third level would be what, clairsentience?
Yeah, but remember, these levels have to be conscious. One is conscious of the seeing and of the communication with the next level. The third level, the highest level, he calls it intuition.
Oh.
And this is the level of the highest aspect of mind, in which a clairvoyant can become one with anything that he contacts. In other words, if it's a spiritual being, he can become one with the consciousness of that spiritual being.
So some people would call that unity.
Unity, right. It's become, it's kind of a oneness. And this Rudolf Steiner says, is the final goal of our human evolution. This is the seventh incarnation of the Earth. We're in the fourth incarnation. It'd be a long time before we reach that stage, in other words.
Well, can people reach that before the Earth does?
Yes, people can, as I say, we have vanguards that can reach these different levels of consciousness far ahead of the average person.
So basically what's happening here is there's a stairway or a ladder of evolution, and you're going there with or without the vanguard, but
yes.
Everyone is going.
If humanity just followed the average course, they would get there eventually. But people who develop this inner need for knowledge and transformation start to work on themselves, on their inner development, and they can achieve these states much, much earlier. But the first 3.5 days after the body is separated from the life body, a man gets a picture of his whole life stretched out in front of him, like a drowning person, and sees his whole life and the significance of everything that's happened. And then he separates from the life body and goes into the astral world, where the emotional body, which contains the karma, is. And he spends, this is called Kamaloka in the Orient, or purgatory in the Catholic religion, and so forth, where man lives his whole life backwards. And so if he lives 60 years, he'll spend 20 years in this frame, and he'll review his whole life, and he'll see his whole life from the experience of what he did to other people, what pain or what misery or what happiness he caused, and most of it will be a repetition, a review of what happened while he was asleep, while he was reviewing his daily life.
Now, what is the, you said if he lived 60 years, he uses 20. What is the bottom line here, 80
it's
years?
It's approximately one-third of his life, and it's the time you spend sleeping. Now, this will, of course, vary because some people don't sleep as much as others, but
okay.
That's the principle. And this sets up the karma for the next incarnation. And when a person realizes what he has to change about himself is he wants to improve and move on to the goal of higher consciousness. And so then he moves into the spiritual sphere. And we were talking about the sphere of Kamaloka, which is the sphere of the moon. We're going through the planetary sphere. Then we go through the sphere of Mercury next. And then we go through the sphere of Venus, and then the sphere of the sun. And if we have been a loving person, and if we have been a religious person, we will be conscious through these spheres of Mercury and Venus. If we have been atheists, agnostics, and not paid much attention to our spiritual development, we will probably be unconscious at this time.
Now, what's the use of this if we're unconscious?
It doesn't do us much good. One of my pupils in astrology class says we should do our homework while we're alive on the earth, and then we will be able to participate in the spiritual world and receive a higher education.
I see.
Because Rudolf Steiner says life in the spiritual world between death and rebirth is much more intense, much more conscious, and much more beautiful than our life on the earth. But we have to earn that by developing our ability to be conscious in those areas.
So the spiritual world would be kind of like heaven.
Yes. But heaven lies a little bit beyond the Venus sphere. We go into the sun sphere. And there, if on the earth we have accepted the Christ, and this is not a religious orientation, we just don't have time to go into all the details.
Okay.
But the Christ as a spiritual being who is guiding our evolution, who represents our higher self, our higher consciousness, if we have not accepted this in the earth life, we will not be conscious in the sun sphere, where we would ordinarily receive the greatest benefit. And then there's still the Mars sphere, the Jupiter sphere, and the Saturn sphere to go through for those who have reached higher levels of consciousness while on their earth development. And then the soul is reflected back, but they spend some time in the world of the stars, the world of the highest of the hierarchies.
Clark, I think we're going to have to hold off and
okay.
Find out about this sometime in the future.
Yes.
I was going to just ask you if there was a way that people who are listening to the show wanted to know more about anthroposophy, how they could find out about this.
There is a Rudolf Steiner Library in Northridge, California, mm-hmm. And it could be, I guess the phone number can be gotten very easily.
Sure. Now,
have a complete stock of Rudolf Steiner books and the books of all of his students.
And of course, this is available in bookstores, is that correct?
Yes.
Rudolf Steiner.
Some of the works of Rudolf Steiner are available in like Dalton or other bookstores, but you don't see very much of it because Rudolf Steiner is not an easy subject. You don't get easy answers because he makes you work at it, he makes you think about it, but it's really worthwhile.
All right. Clark, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. Clark Doane, for those of you who are listening, anthroposophy was the subject.